This is an ABC podcast.
This is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall on ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria.
Have you started to notice gaps on the shelves and in the fridges at your local supermarket? Maybe you've noticed everyday products that are normally there are now missing, and maybe even a sign saying this product is currently unavailable. I've noticed it on everything from meat to dry biscuits, even the type of yogurt that I normally get.
And Rich, I was getting flashbacks to last year when we were in hard lockdown and we couldn't get toilet paper and flour and all that sort of stuff when I went shopping recently, because there were some significant shortages, and we've been warned about this for a while now. But it's really visible at the moment. I've seen signs in my local supermarket explaining that there are supply chain issues. But what exactly are those issues?
And I guess that's the big difference, isn't it? This is not panic buying. These are supply chain issues. And like many things throughout this pandemic, it's kind of because of a perfect storm. There are not enough truck drivers, and many truck drivers are leaving the industry when we need them most. There's border closures. Factories and supermarkets quite often have to shut down because there's been a COVID outbreak.
And now you think, now you're speaking about it, there's the shortage of visa holders, the actual workers, unskilled labourers, backpackers to do everything from packing fruit and veggies through to working in warehouses.
Even picking the fruit and veggies as well. I mean, these supply chain issues that you've been hearing about are maybe now starting to actually impact you and how you shop. And how will that impact us as we head towards Christmas? Maybe you're thinking about the gifts and the products that you want to get. You may actually struggle.
Yeah, so there's been warnings around for months now to get in early. If you need something specific, you need to be trying to get it now. Do we, though, just need to learn to live with this because we've been spoilt for so long, expecting we can get anything anytime, whenever we want it?
So from wetsuits and bikes to English muffins, what products can you not find in the shops at the moment?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with Richelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
So we've been hearing about it for some time, supply chain issues, but maybe now you're only just starting to believe it and you're only just starting to see it when you wander around your supermarket aisles or when you call the local bike shop like we did, Jono, trying to maybe purchase a bike for someone for Christmas, and you get laughed at and you realise, oh, yeah, right, we've been talking about this for some time. There are no bikes.
Our local bike shop didn't laugh at us per se, but they were very respectful in saying, yeah, probably next year, middle of the year, maybe. But I was laughing at this text, and so were you a bit earlier. It says, no Paul Newman's classic salad dressing in Woolies for 3 weeks.
Now, that's an outrage. That's just a step too far. That is a classic salad dressing. It's probably one that you've used for decades. But yeah, these are the little things that will start to notice. And it might be the brand of yogurt, or it might be a particular dry bicky that you like. And all of a sudden, that whole section of the supermarket shelf is gone. Now, again, this is not panic buying. This is the perfect storm of supply chain issues. So what are you starting to notice? But also what I think is there's an interesting underlying question here, Jono, of, well, do we need to start to live with this a little bit? And have we just expected everything? You know, we expect fruit and veggies to be in season all year round. And do we expect every product that we want all the time?
Yeah, and grapes are the other big, like grapes in the supermarket are from the USA right now. And I always feel a bit guilty if I buy them because I think, you know, we should be buying Australian grapes. But wetsuits are one area. I'm always very careful, Rish, when I put my wetsuit on to have short fingernails and just do it very carefully because I don't want to put a tear in the wetsuit because I know there's a shortage at the moment. We're going to be talking about that in just a moment. But firstly, to Philippa at Sydenham. Morning, Philippa.
Oh, hello. Look, this is terrible. It's Christmas coming and we're doing the restock of the pantry. Go to any supermarket and you cannot find halves of peaches, tinned peaches. How on earth do you make peach melt for Christmas without them?
I have no idea. I don't even know what it is, Philippa, let alone how you make it without it.
Well, it's a meringue. Okay. So your base is a meringue, and then you've got your beautiful fresh cream and a half with a peach half on the top.
You're going to have to improvise, Philippa. Can another fruit be swapped here?
Absolutely not. It's un-Australian.
This is named after Dame Nellie Melba, isn't it?
Exactly, yes.
Yeah. Oh, I say, gosh, I really don't know. Yeah. I can't be changed. No good.
Is this a specific tradition in your household, Philippa, to have a peach melon for Christmas?
Training our students, our commercial students at RMIT, these are the things, our classic. And I love our traditional Australian ways, particularly when you're celebrating Christmas. Not available.
Oh, well, people will maybe send us messages, Philippa, and let you know where there are peach halves. Who would have thought? Tinned peaches in halves, not available. Philippa's not happy.
And I know, I mean, it sounds a bit trivial at the moment. We're talking about salad dressing and, you know, not having your peach Melba for Christmas. But there are, you know, there are some larger items as well that are just really, really hard to get. I'm thinking of electronic equipment. You've spoken about bikes, wetsuits, outdoors equipment. And this is because of, as you described earlier, Rish, a perfect storm. There's so many problems and barriers to getting goods into the country at the moment.
Here's a perfect example from text here. There's a shortage of real maple syrup. I know this is a first world problem, says Eliza in Camberwell. And as you mentioned, Jono, there is a shortage of wetsuits. This is something that I did not know. Dylan Schultz is the manager and hardware buyer at Strapper Surf in Torquay. Who would have known, Dylan? Is there a big shortage of wetsuits and surfboards at the moment?
Yeah, absolutely, especially coming into Christmas. It's sort of all coming to a head with increased demand and a real shortage of supply at the moment.
Why?
Combination. Shipping delays are a big one. A lot of the things are ready sitting in containers at the wharf and just cannot get on a boat into Australia. And then at a factory level, there is material shortages, lockdowns at the factory level. Some factories have power rationing, so they're not able to work, you know, at full capacity. And then internally in Australia, you have things like the border closures where workers just cannot get to work for some of the productions of surfboards, so that's created a bit of a backlog. And then just during COVID, we saw a huge increase in participation in outdoor sports with all the team sports and indoor activities sort of unable to happen. A lot of people headed outdoors, like the bike riding and other activities, and wetsuits and surfboards became a huge part of that.
So what sort of wait list are we looking at now?
Depending on the suit, we order and buy our suits up to 10 to 12 months in advance to try and be organised, and they're still getting delays far beyond that. Some categories are sorted, but in women's and kids in particular, some of the key suits, people are waiting up to 6 months for the suit they're after.
Where are wetsuits and surfboards generally made these days?
A lot of surfboard production is still in Australia, but there's a mixture of both Australian production as well as some of the Asian factories, whereas wetsuits in particular, the majority is out of Thailand and out of Asia, and that's where the biggest delays are coming from.
I mean, if this is something that will be a part of how we operate now, do you think that we need to slowly, I know it will take time, but do we need to actually look at maybe producing more of these products locally?
Yeah, where possible, for sure, where it's, you know, affordable to do so, and just being more organised going forward. Looking into next year, there's no promise of it getting better at the moment. It looks like it possibly could get worse going into next year. But yeah, definitely diversifying how people are getting things made will help that problem.
And as we've spoken about, it's an issue of getting the staff to do it. I mean, it's all great to have a company that makes Australian surfboards, but how do you get the staff and the skilled staff to be able to do that?
Yeah, absolutely. At the moment, three or four of Australia's biggest surfboard providers are right on the border on the Gold Coast. So that's been the biggest issue, where some of the factories, you know, only have 15, 20 staff, and there's been times where only three or four of them can get to work for months at a time. And they'll be doing part of the work on one side of the border, passing the board across the border to get finished off, then passing it back again, and just the double handling and the inability to get to work has been a huge hindrance in that.
Yeah, well, fair enough. Look, thank you for having a chat with us. And I will be very careful when I put my wetsuit on now. I will not put any tears in it because I know that I cannot replace it readily, Dylan.
Good to hear.
Thank you. Dylan Schultz, manager and hardware buyer at Strapper Surf in Torquay.
Everything from wetsuits, bikes, even English muffins, if that's what you like for breakfast or an afternoon snack. These are all products that are in short supply at the moment. We've been talking about supply chain issues for some time now, so you're starting to notice that. Amanda in Wangaratta says, guys, sorry, but why are you focusing on supply chain issues? It's just going to make it worse by triggering mass panic buying. Well, hopefully not, and that's not what today's show is about. far from it. It's actually just looking at the issues behind it and starting to actually take a good look at ourselves, at where our products come from and why these issues have come about. So it's more about that.
And I love how helpful people are on the text line as well. We're talking about the peach melba and how how we might not have the peach melba for Christmas. Someone has texted in saying, look, you can just, peaches are in season, you can just pickle your own, or not pickle, you
poach.
Can poach your own and away you go. There's also a great recipe here. We were talking about a shortage of salad dressing earlier, about making your own salad dressing. So maybe this is what we need to look at, Rish. We need to get a bit more resourceful.
Yeah.
We need to just do a bit more of this stuff ourselves.
It is interesting, though, looking at the products that people like to buy. If it didn't already take me to a trip down memory lane for the Paul Newman's classic salad dressing, someone has sent us a message here saying food shortages, potato gems, uncooked corned beef and ginger beer all missing from their local supermarket. I can't remember the last time I had a potato gem, and I think, oh, I can't even go and buy some because there's not any.
Just reminds me of Napoleon Dynamite whenever you talk about those. But thank you to Michael in Monty for sending through that, I'm guessing it's Montmorency, for sending through that recipe for salad dressing. It sounds pretty good. I think I might have to do that. But let's have a chat now with Fred Harrison, the CEO of Richie's IGA Supermarket. Good morning. How big is this issue for you?
Well, look, it's certainly a live issue and it changes by the day. And there's a variety of reasons. I mean, some of it is product coming overseas. Some of it is obviously local product here in Australia with a lot of plants, factories having reduced workforce numbers due to COVID lockdowns, having to isolate. Some of it is as simple as pallets. A lot of manufacturers have run out of wooden pallets. There's a worldwide shortage of pallets, they can produce, but there is no pallet to be able to put the product onto transport to warehouses and the like. And some of that's also caused by the shortage of hardwood around the world. So, look, it's just almost six, seven, eight different things all coming together at the wrong time. And we'll get through this, but it is going to create spot issues all the way through into the new year.
I wonder how much we need to change our attitude. There's a text here that says first world problems, really. And I noticed the other day when I saw all these different gaps, I actually had this moment of calm where I thought, who cares? You know, I was going to make chicken. There's no chicken. I'll make something else. Or these products aren't here. I'll get something else. And I actually got quite used to seeing big gaps on the supermarket shelves. Mm. And for that moment, Fred, I thought, all right, I think this is how it's going to be for a while now. And we actually need to change our attitude when it comes to the products that are available. Are people getting frustrated at you, or are they starting to take this in their stride a bit?
That's a great question, and I admire your attitude because that's a terrific way to look at it, is just deal with it. It mightn't be there today, but there's a fair chance it could be back on the shelf next week. So I think if people are a little bit flexible in their thinking, I think that's going to go a long way to getting through this situation. The second part of your question, people are getting frustrated. I mean, if you like a particular brand of yogurt, you want to be able to buy that brand. And we have been spoiled over the years because our supply chain right across Australia, whilst expensive, is excellent. We tend to be able to supply. I know our biggest supplier is Metcash. We generally get 98 to 99% of our order on time every time. So I think the public rightfully have become spoiled, and Coles and Woolies are the same. So I think if you can have that flexible attitude with a smile on your face, that's going to help us all.
Yeah, although there were supermarket workers who were reporting fairly significant abuse during lockdowns and when there were rushes on things like toilet paper, etc. We're coming into a time of Christmas which is based around tradition. We like to have...
Yeah, you can't get your peach halves. What are you going
to
do?
Yeah, for Peach Melba, people like to have roasts at Christmas. People like to, you know, do a whole lot of traditions at Christmas. Do you think that there will be some tension in supermarkets when they get there and they realise they just can't get these products?
You're 100%. Stress levels rose significantly. The more the COVID cases went up, the more customers got uptight, the more incidents we had in our stores. And conversely, when we went through those more normal periods, everyone was far more relaxed. And I think Christmas by nature creates an enormous amount of stress. So I think people are going to be a little bit on tender hooks, and it has been hard on our staff. That's probably the biggest issue we've had to deal with of late, is just trying to manage that process with staff not necessarily taking it personal. So from a Richie's perspective and Coles and Woolies, it is all credit to the frontline team because they have had to endure a lot this past 18 months.
Well, we really hope that people are as nice as they can possibly be, because that's all we've got, really, isn't it, is to be nice to each other, and we're all just doing our best. So, Fred, this is the first time I've wished someone a Merry Christmas. It's the first one for the year.
Well,
so
beauty, I'm the first.
You're the first, mate. I'm getting very Christmassy.
And I'll respond and wish you and your listeners a very Merry Christmas.
Yes, you can.
And a safe and happy New Year.
Oh, good on you, Fred. We wish you all the best. That's Fred Harrison. He's the CEO of Ritchie's IGA Supermarkets. Maybe it was a bit early, Jono, because do I have to now wish everyone a Merry Christmas? For many weeks.
That's the rule now. It's the 11th of November. So everyone you speak to from now on, you have to wish them a Merry Christmas.
There are so many different products here. It's really interesting. Madonna and Thornbury says a special type of foam for cleaning silverware has not been available for more than a year. Another text that's come in saying, I can't get the particular type of brown rice crackers that I like. But another's come from Caroline in East Melbourne. She says, as a food retailer, I can say that pretty much anything imported from the US is unavailable or experiencing long-term delays due to significant COVID impacts on workforces, warehouses and transport. So again, it comes down to where is our stuff coming from?
Yep. Yeah. And there's some people making that point on the text line as well around, a lot of our products do come from Asia. And there's some significant problems in getting our products from Asia. Shane says, we've been waiting for a tractor to arrive from Germany for 3 months. Shipping companies have a lot to do with the problem. There are huge increases in charges and using COVID as an excuse. But this is what we are going to see as well. The price of things is going to go up. Things are going to get more expensive because it's a supply and demand situation, Rish. If there isn't a great supply, then things are going to go up. Speaking of English muffins as well, you were talking about them earlier, Rish. This text says they were available at my local supermarket, but they were two packs for $6. And the texter is saying it's quite expensive. So that's the other aspect to this, is it's going to be an expensive Christmas, I think.
I feel like a real buttery, toasted English muffin right about now. Anne's in Braybrook. Hi, Anne.
Hi. You can add coffee to that list.
Okay.
Cheap coffee. I'm not talking about the top of the shelf coffee. Yeah. I'm talking about the budget sort of coffee. It's a well-known company. It's been around for over 50 years. It comes out of Queensland, but it's distributed from New Zealand.
And haven't been able to get it?
No, and a particular supermarket, I don't want to mention who it was, they had it advertised for sale, and I went to the shelf, looked at it, and it was empty. I called the guy from out the back to come and ask when he was getting it in. And then when they finally got it in, they put it back to the original price. So I think they should, if something's not in the shelf, why are they advertising it for sale?
And I think that's the thing too, is looking at whether or not prices will be inflated here and whether or not people will capitalise on this.
I just think we have to bank on that. I think they will be. I think it will be a more expensive Christmas, and the next few weeks and months will be more expensive than usual because of all of these problems. Celia is in Heathcote. G'day, Celia. What do you think?
Hello, how are you?
Good.
What I'm ringing about is when I first came to this country, all the food was made here. It was absolutely stunning. Now you've got all the junk coming from China. You've got peas floating around on the container outside waiting to be delivered. Nobody makes any tin food. The food and the meat is coming from overseas when you've got people here that are, growing their own cattle and cows and the food should be distributed properly here.
And also I was wondering, Celia, when I saw some shortages in particular meat products at my local supermarket, one of which has just decided to stop in-house butchering as well, and they're relying on pre-packaged meat. So there's another chain within that supply chain, and that's potentially going to have an impact as well.
The abattoirs are now being taken over by the Chinese, and so they're doing all in-house stuff for the supermarkets. So the poor local butchers are now struggling because they're just not getting the quality of meat.
Well, we're actually hearing that we did an entire program on butchers. You can go back and have a listen to that. And a lot of local butchers are saying that their sales are up by 40%. Yeah. So I'm not sure about that.
I want to take push back a little bit on what Celia was saying about no one's canning anything. I mean, you look at Shepparton. It's not the fact that no one's canning anything. It's probably just not as attractive anymore to get into that, particularly for smaller players.
You know what I love about this is that we're getting some really good recipes for salad dressings. moment. So if we need to, on the side, bring out a salad dressing recipe book, we could do that. One here that says one part red wine vinegar to five parts olive oil, a small clove of crushed garlic and a splash of Dijon mustard. Yum. That's from Oliver.
Perfect. Thank you for reading that out, because I got in trouble before on the text line. Someone said, oh, why didn't you read out the salad dressing recipe? Not just for you. So thank you for reading that out. Dr. Hermione Parsons is a director at the Centre for Supply Chain and Logistics at Deakin University. Good morning. Now, when we look at this global supply chain, it's not one link in the chain that's gone down. There are several links that have gone down. Is that right?
I would say good morning. And yes, there have been many, many links. Supply chains are very complex, and the end-to-end numbers of companies and functions between the beginning of the manufacturing or the picking of the product to getting that product on the shop shelf, they are very complex systems. And we've had so many linkages broken down or upset by the pandemic, and they're continuing to be so.
And what do you think the result here will be? Will it be that we'll maybe rethink how we do this and try and localise what we buy and purchase and what we supply? Or will we just wait until all of those systems are up and running again?
Well, I think it will be very much the former. And I think, personally, I think it's a really important thing that we do.
That could be the glass half full moment out of this.
Yes, exactly. And we can't pretend that... we can't pretend that the world is only probably having one pandemic. You know, a lot of the scientists have been saying for a long time, and the research has been saying there could be a few pandemics and a few variations with different variants. So I think Australia needs to think very hard about the way in which we rely on other countries for so many critical components and spare parts and food items, etc.
We've had a couple of texts saying, you know, this surely these are first world problems. You know, you can't get your salad dressing. Who cares? But I mean, is there a more serious angle to this? I mean, some people really rely on these products, don't they?
They do. And I do think some of the issues that people are very concerned about are first world problems, and we're very fortunate that we can focus on those things about not being able to get our favourite yoghurt or not being able to get one particular item on the shop shelf that we really, really like. I think we need to just take stock and think about a pandemic and what does that mean globally. And every country, every group of people, every part of the industry worldwide has been impacted. Mm. So the problem that we have is that we have this huge backlog of containers and freight in different ports of the world, in different parts of the world, and every port has got this huge issue of the backlog. So people are working very hard across the global supply chains to to release the containers and to allow the transportation and the movement and the normal supply chain to work as society has known it. That's it's like a hidden industry.
But we should remember it's not just salad dressing that's caught up in those ports. It's also,
Medicine.
Medical equipment. Yeah. Some really, really important stuff in those shipping containers.
Well, you're quite right. And, you know, we have a situation in Australia where because we're an island nation, we rely on two modes of transport to get everything in and out, either a ship or a plane. And we've had huge issues with the aviation industry collapsing during the pandemic. The problems that we have bringing air freight of critical medical parts, vaccines, critical components for manufacturing into Australia by air freight or by sea freight is a really big issue for Australia. And we're continuing to have, you know, very serious impacts with nowhere near the number of planes moving to and from Australia. And similarly, we have the great problems in terms of global shipping. And we're not alone in that, but Australia is doing much better than many other countries.
Dr. Hermione Parsons is with you, Director at the Centre for Supply Chain and Logistics at Deakin University. Mark's from Healesville has called through. Mark, welcome. What did you want to say?
Oh, yeah, we've got supply issues with industrial electronics. And we manufacture food processing equipment, and a lot of that's fully automated, and all the automation equipment is in very short supply. Stuff I used to be able to buy off the shelf or 2 to 3 weeks ex-Europe, is now, they're quoting me 6 months, 26
wow.
weeks delivery for so electronic components.
Is that because of the shortage of electronic chips, of computer chips?
Yeah, yes it is.
Yeah, and I guess that would be compounded by all of the shipping delays, the air delays, the border closures, the shortage of workers because of COVID-19. So, yeah, it is a real perfect storm.
It is. It's terrible. And apparently that electronics shortage is, well, they've all been referring to it as Chipageddon. But it's a combination, I think, of droughts in Taiwan, where there are a lot of the chips were manufactured, which use huge quantities of water, apparently.
Well, once you've got a slang title for something, you know you're in trouble. Mark, thank you. It was something we didn't know about. Bill's in Mildura. Hi, Bill.
Yes, just a couple of a point I want to raise is tariffs. See, if you're a distributor of food in Australia, and you bring food into Australia, the tariff you pay is very, very low compared to other countries. We don't have a tariff barrier, so it's very cheap for anyone to import food. That's one. Two, which is not clearly understood by the general public, is we have an international treaty when it comes to food with New Zealand. There's a lot of food that can come, that's comes into Australia through New Zealand that is not tested for chemical residue. And I'll leave you with this. Only Aqueous only tests 5% of all of the food that comes in from overseas. There is a chemical called carbendazine, which is known to cause birth defects in children.
Bill,
banned.
Yeah, I think that might be just going off the topic a little bit, but I get your point about just looking at tariffs and the fact that it's cheaper. I mean, we've got so many texts here about imports. It says here, sadly, we can't afford local. Imports are much cheaper than majority buy on price. That's from Alan, talking about food miles as well. Even flowers, cut flowers. A lot of our cut flowers come from overseas. You know, they are almost like snap frozen and come from China. That's a good thing. You know, if that stops, then local florists get that work. But so many of our products do come from overseas.
That's right. And it is tricky too, because are our local florists able to fill? I mean, are they able to export to so many supermarkets around Australia, which is the really tricky thing. And Matt on the text line says, come on, people, let's try something different and excite our taste buds instead of the normal. Donna in Canberra. G'day, Donna. Donna says, perhaps we should start to use that fifth bag of groceries that we just seem to throw out, according to statistics.
Yeah, well, that's something we haven't even touched on. Dr. Hermione Parsons, when you're listening to a lot of this, I mean, what do you think will impact just the average person the most for, let's say, the next 12 months? Of course, Christmas is coming up. That's something that's going to impact. But then Christmas will go. Is this something that is going to be long-term for us as consumers?
I'm afraid it is. The shortage of shipping vessels, the shortage of shipping containers, the backlog caused by, you know, when the Suez Canal was blocked recently, but also through the pandemic and ports being closed, etc., and then being reopened, it means we've got this massive backlog of containers across the world that recently that backlog alone was modelled to be equivalent to about a full year's worth of cargo for the world. So there's a massive backlog. So I do think we will continue to be impacted. We've also got huge price increases. The shipping companies of the world are charging 300 to 400% price increases compared to pre-COVID prices of getting a shipping container to and from Australia. That's a massive price increase. And I think the perfect storm, one of your people, I think it was Mark, mentioned the perfect storm. And it's quite true that we have very serious issues globally. And Australia is in an enviable situation. We've got 26 million people. We produce enough food for 70 million people. Most of that has been exported traditionally. Same with flowers. We have enormous capability here to feed our population, to make people happy and well. And we need to just look at our supply chains domestically in a different way. We can't get the product out by export as we used to. Well, what can we do within Australia using our domestic supply chains.
But, I mean, it's inevitable, isn't it? We are, this is globalisation. We are part of a global economy. We export, we import. And I know, you know, it's frustrating, but I'm looking at in August, one coronavirus case was enough to shut down a critical part of the world's third busiest container port at Ningbo in China for a fortnight. That's just one of the issues. We haven't even got talking about truck drivers as well and how it is that link in the chain has been brought down as well. So as much as we want to concentrate on buying locally and encouraging...
Is this not the line in the sand, though? I mean, can this not be the moment where we say, okay, we know that it's not working?
I think the horse has bolted. Has the horse bolted, Grish?
I think the horse
has bolted in two different directions. One, because of our expensive labour prices.
Yes.
As a country, we have relied on manufacturing from other parts of the world. But global supply chains mean we do rely for computer chips for all sorts of things from all across the world, and we're part of that global supply chain. But we also have enormous opportunity in Australia to do things differently. And I believe we need to from a supply chain perspective because we're an island nation. We're at risk compared to other countries that can have, they're landlocked and they can use trains and trucks as well as planes and ships. But we rely absolutely for all imports and all exports on air freight or sea freight. Therefore, we have quite a different situation to so many other countries. And we have this massive production of food and so many opportunities that we can be doing so much better with if we readjust our thinking because of the pandemic and because of what we've learned.
Readjusting the thinking. And that's coming through on text as well. Hamani, it's been fascinating speaking with you. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Merry Christmas.
Oh, Merry Christmas. Oh,
you've started it now, Rish.
I'm doing it. I love it. Dr. Hamani Parsons, Director of the Centre for Supply Chain and Logistics at Deakin University. This is interesting, Jono. This is from Anya in Paran. Hi, I've just got my new car. It was a 6-month wait, but it's not such a bad thing to have something to look forward to. We are so used to instantaneous reward.
Yeah, instant gratification. But, I mean, the car industry is a really interesting one as well. It's another exercise in supply and demand, because imagine you're an 18-year-old trying to buy your first car, right? The second-hand car market, the prices are really inflated because no one can buy
a new car.
Yeah. So, I mean, where does that put that 18-year-old trying to buy their first car? It's, you know, it just affects everyone, this thing.
As this text says, the party's over. It's time to consume less. So what have you been waiting for? What are the solutions? And do we need to consume less? Do we have to just accept that we are going to wait longer for things and that not everything will be available when you want it?
On ABC Radio Melbourne and Victoria, this is The Conversation Hour with Rochelle Hunt and Jonathan Kendall.
From wetsuits to bikes to salad dressing to surfboards to English muffins, what products can't you get in the shops at the moment? Electronic goods is the other one. Medical goods, CPAPs, anything to do with computer chips. There's big delays on those at the moment. So what are you noticing that you can't get? Let's have a chat with Stephen in Geelong. You work in the car industry, Stephen. What have you noticed?
Yes, I'm in the repair business. We're waiting. We've run out of paints. We've run out of tinters to make the colours to apply to the cars. So if you can hear a humming noise now, I'm actually sitting in a spray booth waiting for paint for a customer to get his car out ready for tomorrow night. And it just isn't going to happen because the companies that mix our paint, the different colour codes, they can't get the tinters to mix the paint. Each colour can vary from 3, 4, 5, and 6 tinters to make that colour on your car. And it's not only that, it's the chemicals that come out of America and Germany, the hardener that makes the paint go off, the thinners that put the paint through the gun easier, right down to the polyurethanes that stick your windscreen in. We've got cars sitting ready to go, but we can't get polyurethane to stick the windscreens in.
Stephen, we've had people call us from really strange and unusual places, but yours almost goes to the top of the list at the moment in terms of what you're doing and where you're calling us from. But what does that mean? Does it mean that we're all going to have the same coloured cars? Is that something else we have to just, you know, suck it up? You can all have a red car.
Yeah, it comes, unfortunately, it comes back to me being the spray painter that puts the colour on your car. You come and pick it up and go, hang on a minute, that colour is not the same as the rest of the car. The problem is, like I said, we can only go by what tinters are available to make the colour to go on your car. The people that have the accidents that go through the insurance company, for sure, they want their car ASAP. But we
you mightn't be able to colour match it. Yeah, it's like doing the dodgy hair colour when we couldn't get to hairdressers. And you think, you know what, I'll do my own roots. How bad could it be? And it turns out pretty bad.
But this is what Steve and I think was touching on there is that we just need to adjust our expectations. If we're used to getting things, you know, whenever we want it on demand, it's just not going to happen. And I think Stephen really explained really nicely there about how complex it is to do something that we thought was simple, like, you know, paint a car. Yeah. It's not.
So
there are
elements.
All these different elements and all these different ingredients that you need. Peter Anderson is the CEO of the Victorian Transport Association. Peter, welcome. This is another link in the chain that's gone down. There just aren't enough truck drivers, are there?
Good morning. You're not wrong there. We're suffering greatly in Victoria and in Australia for truck drivers. The capacity for the industry to be able to react to a reduction in truck drivers is just not there. We don't have that capacity at all.
Peter, we've known this for some time. We've dedicated an entire show to the trucking industry and the fact that there are not enough truck drivers. So this shouldn't come as a surprise to anyone. And yet it seems to be getting worse. You know, I was only reading the other day that even more truck drivers are leaving the industry at a time when we need them most. So has any plan been put into place?
Well, there's a lot of good work going on. We've got a program that actually puts a person behind the wheel for 8 days while they're trained to drive a truck, keeping in mind they get the licence within the first half day. But the industry won't employ someone that's just got a licence because they know that the individual isn't trained to drive a truck. And this is what we're trying to change.
Safe, yeah.
And it's about low-risk driving. It's about making sure that the person that's behind the wheel understands their responsibilities and is on a pathway to becoming a professional truck driver. And we see our industry as a profession for those individuals to build a career.
Is that the only solution, though, Peter? I know we've spoken about this in the past, and I don't know a lot about it, but that kind of makes me feel slightly uncomfortable. If the solution is putting people up that maybe don't have a heap of experience, surely there's got to be another way around this. Because the other thing is people push limits and companies push the limits, and all of a sudden someone, you know, that, oh, look, you know, you should only be driving a truck this size, but hey, mate, you know, we've got some issues today. We're going to put you in a bigger truck or you're going to drive longer hours. It just seems to be fraught with dangers to me.
Indeed, and you're spot on there, Rochelle, and that's exactly what the paradigm we're trying to change. The actual structure upon which we operate within the industry doesn't support people coming in and doesn't support the actual expectations the community has on our industry. And this is what we've got to change. And the issue there is that once we do change it, people will see our industry as something that they can build a career on and enjoy doing because it is safe, because it is responsible, because it actually contributes to the standard of living that we all enjoy. And this is where we're pushing hard on the bureaucracies of the different governments to try and get them to understand they've got to change their old ways of thinking, their old ways of doing things. We've got people, well, we don't have them now, but for quite some time we've had people coming in from overseas who aren't necessarily skilled in driving trucks, but we have no one else to grab hold of to do the job.
Gosh.
And the job has to be done.
What's the solution? I mean, we chatted about this last time we had you on, but how can we fix this?
Well, we're working very hard. We've recently just been able to get ratified an apprenticeship into the transport industry, which is the first step towards actually getting young people starting to drive trucks. We'd like to see 18-year-olds trained to be able to drive a truck, so people can see our industry as a career straight out of school. At the moment, the system doesn't allow them to do that. So we usually get people that have already had two or three career changes before they get to us. So we're not getting people who can see our industry as a career, as a profession.
And that's what we need to change. I mean, that could be substituted for so many different industries and professions, the idea of bringing back apprenticeships. You know, we've spoken about that from hairdressing through to hospitality. Peter, it's been fascinating speaking with you. Thanks so much.
Lovely. Thank you.
That's Peter Anderson, the CEO of Victorian Transport Association. We did do an entire program on truck driver shortages. But, Jono, I think we're going to have to follow up apprenticeships. It's something that you and I have been talking about. Because here's another industry where they're saying we need apprenticeships.
Yeah.
Bring them back.
Yeah. Is that just a way, another way that we need to change the way we think, to change the way we think about training? And has the world changed since that model worked, where we had, you know, someone training for 4 years and getting paid not very much, you know, for the love of the job, so that then when they finished, they could become a fully fledged, worker and get paid a decent rate? Have we moved on from that? Do we need to change our expectations around that as well? Adrian is in Malvern. G'day, Adrian. You work in Cut Flowers.
That's right, yeah, and thank you for taking my call. The supply chain challenges that you've been talking about have impacted the cut flower industry in a variety of ways. Imports form a percentage of flowers supplied on the Australian market, and with the lack of flights coming into the country, there was a reduction in flower supply, and the positive effect, I suppose, it really drove sales and prices and demand of Australian-grown flowers.
Mm.
And that's been incredibly strong all through almost 2 years of COVID. Imports, got back quickly. They're coming into the country, but at much higher freight rates, and the prices are considerably higher. So that has also helped Australian producers whose prices have gone up during this period.
I can just hear some people wondering about why we import any flowers at all. I mean, why should we be flying flowers in from overseas when we just grow some beautiful ones here in Australia?
It's purely supply demand. There's not enough flowers grown in Australia. So particularly to supply the supermarket chain, the volume of roses and chrysanthemums and orchids and a few other items that the supermarket require on a weekly basis at a certain price.
This is what we expect, though. Again, this is what it's come back down to. Without sort of flogging heaps of our previous shows, we did a show on the.
It sounds like you are.
We did a show on local floristry, and it was the most fascinating program. You learn about how much we do import flowers. Yes. I had no idea the shortages. The fact that we now buy our flowers and expect to be able to buy a lot of flowers from your local supermarket. And I'll never forget a text that we got during that show that said, and I'm sure Adrian will like this, which is said, don't buy your flowers where you buy your toilet paper. You know, it just, those two shouldn't go hand in hand. But we now expect to be able to buy a bunch of flowers when we do our shopping.
Whenever I go into a supermarket, though, I see the discounted flowers and they're almost going to waste. So are we just, you know, is the supply chain about wasting things in a way?
I mean,
we just accept that waste, and should we accept that anymore? I guess there are people on the text line saying no. We just need to, you know, just buy Australian flowers and just create our own salad dressing, and you know, poach our own peaches, and just get on with the show.
I know, and this is a funny text here saying, "How many flowers do people need? What the hell?" I'm one of those weirdos that loves fresh flowers. Like, I'll always come home from the farmer's market or from my greengrocer with flowers. So maybe it's my fault. Tali's in Pakenham. Hi, Tali.
Hi, how are you?
Good. What did you want to say?
This has actually had a positive effect in my family. We've identified sort of some of these issues, and we've become a lot more self-sufficient, growing our fruits and vegetables, things like this. But also my children have recognised that they can't, as far as this disposable society that we've kind of become, if they break or damage something, they can't just go out and have it easily replaced. Yep. So they're now taking greater care of the things they own. They're more interested in going to places like the Selvo shops and collecting or shopping for recycled items instead of brand new items. So this is, you know, they've got a newfound interest in wanting to make their own things as well, cooking from home instead of relying on things that they can't get at the supermarket. So this has had a really positive effect in my family.
Oh, yeah, Tali, that's so good. And I think that's the positive underlying message here, Jono, isn't it? We got a wonderful photograph that was sent to us by Helen, I think it was, who showed us underneath her stairs. She's sort of got this bunker of, actually, you know what's probably under there? It's probably some poached peaches, and there's someone that there's someone that's going to want to get their hands on those. But, you know, lots of sterilised jars and preserved food, you know? that's we need to reshape how we purchase and how we use stuff.
Yeah, well, speaking of fruit, Tan Trong is the fruit nerd from ABC every day, and I use that term with the greatest of respect. Good morning. What are you seeing with fruit at the moment?
G'day, Jono, Rochelle. So good to be on the show. Look, fruits are coming into season. I'm really excited to tell people about stone fruit. And as we're on the topic with, you know, the disposable society and, you know, the cut flowers being in overabundance, you know, I just wanted to say that the one thing that I have seen in the pandemic and certainly with food is this idea of a conscience culture.
Mm.
Now, we do live in overabundance and we grow here in Australia far more than all Australians could ever eat. So, you know, if you walk through to your greengrocer or to your supermarket, you probably never see your shelves ever empty. And obviously at the start of the pandemic, we saw a few of those rushes come through. But as a society, we just can't accept. It's not in our culture to see an empty shelf.
Yeah, I know. And that's got to change, doesn't it?
That has to change, right? And we live in this world of overabundance and that causes waste. Now, I previously worked for Coles as a national buyer. And if you had empty shelves for one day, the sales that you would lose is so great that you would never want your shelves to be empty. And that's just the way that it's inbuilt in our capitalist society. Now, it has to change. One thing that I can give people in terms of an update is, well, let's just think of fruits in general coming into Christmas, right? So we've got mangoes that have just come in, and then stone fruit is now coming in full flush. Do you guys like stone fruit? What's your favourite stone fruit, guys? Jono?
Oh, peaches. Peaches.
Peaches.
Yeah, peaches. Nectarines.
Nectarines.
Apricots. Mm. Oh, all of them. I love them.
Righty. So stone fruit's coming in. You know, you're probably seeing it all over the shelves right now. But to be honest, I think the stone fruit is picked a bit too backward at the moment. I personally, as the fruit nerd, as a fruiterer, I wouldn't eat most of the stone fruit right now because it's picked too early.
This is the thing, you know, I've noticed, Tan, and people laughed at me. And I've said for the last couple of years, stone fruit, you know, once you would walk into your greengrocer and you could smell the stone fruit before you could see it. And you knew, oh, it's stone fruit season because you could smell it. There is no smell anymore. They don't taste as good as they used to. Is that all because it's being picked at the wrong time?
You are speaking my language, yeah. Rochelle. And yes, you're using your senses, right? Mm-hmm. The fruit is actually telling you to eat it even before you see it, even before you touch it. Now, my dad is the mango master and he will always know that the mango is like ripe when he can smell it. And it's not just you can smell mangoes. He can actually smell the sweetness in them. And he actually, you know, goes through trays and trays and pallets to pick out a tray that he'll eat. And it's the exact same thing with stone fruit, right? Now, stone fruit is picked a little bit too early, but it's not just the early and in what we call in the industry backward, but we now grow stone fruit in areas that generally aren't stone fruit growing regions like Queensland. And, you know, stone fruit really is a cooler climate crop. So, you know, when you think about things like cherries, right? Victoria grows some amazing cherries, but, you know, New South Wales cherries don't taste fantastic at all. And then when you think about Tasmanian cherries.
Yeah, don't tread carefully here, Tan. Tread very carefully.
Yeah, look, I'm treading very carefully. And, you know, everything I say, you know, it does cause a bit of controversy as such, but I speak the truth and growers, they would agree with me, even if it goes against.
So I guess the big question is, though, are we going to be able to have cherries this Christmas? I admitted to Jono off air, I don't see the big deal with cherries. I know people are going to probably hate on me saying that. They look nice on the table as a centrepiece, but are we going to have a shortage of cherries this Christmas?
That's a great question, Rochelle. And what I will say to people is what they won't find is peaches or nectarines or apricots in short supply because they can be kept for a few weeks, right? They do pick them slightly backwards and they manage them really well with the refrigeration and logistics. But cherries are just so ephemeral. They're picked, they're sent to the supermarket and they need to be eaten in days.
See, they're time maintenance. So,
yeah. There they are.
But it's worth it, Rish. It's worth it. They're beautiful. The cherry
Jono,
on the top.
You are my friend. You are. Yeah. You know, we're on the same side here. And what I can tell people, my super tip for cherries is there is nothing like Christmas than, you know, a plate of cherries, you know, on the Christmas line for Christmas dinner or, you know, the Christmas Eve. What I will tell people, and my piece of advice is, the week of Christmas, you always see everything like slightly more expensive or really hard to get your good prawns or, you know, your turkey on that week. You need to have everything pre-ordered. Now, with cherries, you've got to pick your cherries the week before Christmas, because the thing is, cherries can last weeks in the fridge, but the week of Christmas, you're always going to have issues in supply because everybody wants them. So the week beforehand, you know, between the 15th to the 20th of December, I highly suggest that everyone in Victoria, if you want cherries for Christmas, go to your greengrocer, go to your farmer's market, look for the gift box cherries, because they're always a higher grade cherry than the ones in the bags, right, the loose bags.
I always feel like they're too fancy and that you're getting charged for the box. But just finally, Tan, I wanted to ask you here. There's a text saying, yes, we all want to buy local, but they're more expensive. Unfortunately, imports are much cheaper. Is that the change that we need to see, do you think, when it comes to our produce, to make local produce more affordable? Or do we need to flip it and just accept that we need to pay more?
That's a really great question. And I've thought about this answer for a long, long time. And my motto is that good food starts with good produce. Now, I think that if local produce eats better than overseas produce, then by all means, we need to be supporting local. And generally, that is the case because it's quicker to market, it's fresher. But I think that's what we need to demand of all the produce in Australia, not just produce that is grown as a commodity, not just produce that is grown to be cheap. I do think that we live in a global economy and that we do need to accept imports, because as a country, we export so much of our food, our grains, our cattle, a lot of our produce. And so we need to be competitive in the global environment. But I do think that we need to be driving our local growers and our local produce to be eating better than everywhere else. And I think we're doing a really good job, but there's still a lot of work to do. And that's my answer, if that helps.
Amen, Tan. Amen. Thank you for having a chat with us about fruit. And you can hear the passion in Tan's voice around fruit.
He's a fruit nerd.
He's the self-confessed fruit nerd. He loves fruit. He could talk about fruit all day. And that was just a snippet of it. Rish, this text from Rob in Ballarat says, last caller was spot on. Shortages are good. In our disposable, consumer-driven lives, it has made us appreciate the small things more rather than taking them for granted. So maybe this is a good thing.
And it's a change of attitude. I mean, even something as simple as this text that says, well, people will just have to start buying Australian-grown tin tomatoes. Yep. That's the thing. We think, oh, Italian is better. It's a shift in attitude, maybe not expecting or being stressed or being rude to someone within your local supermarket because shelves are empty or you can't get your salad dressing or your peaches or your brown crackers or whatever it may be, that's just going to be the way that it is from now on.
Yep. Yeah, indeed. I've just felt myself changing in my opinion throughout the program, actually, that we have relied for too long on the global supply chain, and maybe we do need to change the way we buy. If you've missed some of the conversation today, or you've been listening and thinking, oh, look, I know someone who really should listen to this, you can get this on podcast. The Conversation Hour is available wherever you get your podcasts or on the ABC Listen app.
And you can always email us as well if you have a person or an idea that you'd like to share with us. Our email address, conversationhour@abc.net.au. Till we speak to you next time, take care and speak soon.